All right. Well, thanks a lot, Stephen. I feel really honored to have the invitation to speak in this symposium, and I also feel really honored to work with a great team of researchers and extension educators and farmers in Pennsylvania on this topic. So I think anytime teams get together to do this multiple ecosystem service, multifunctionality stuff, you end up having a lot of people involved. And so there's a lot of co-authors there that I want to thank for their work in developing these ideas and collecting the data, and also recognize an even broader project team that has spanned farmers and nonprofit organizations that we work with as part of the research and outreach, and postdocs that have come and gone on the project and contributed in various ways. And it's been funded through the USDA Organic Research and Extension Initiative. The work that I'm reporting here was funded through that, so I want to recognize them. So I don't know how it is in all of your states, but in Pennsylvania, every fall, we see these tents popping up in fields around the countryside. And if you were to wander into one of these tents from, you know, off of the roadside and see what's going on in there, see what the crowd is, you might run into someone like this. This is Ray Archuleta from NRCS, and he and maybe some other celebrity farmers would be espousing all the benefits of cover crop mixtures. And you'd hear these amazing stories of farmers that are, you know, growing high yield crops without any fertilizer inputs, and no tillage without herbicides, and they're even selling their cover crops as cut flowers at the local farmers market and whatnot. And depending on your disposition, you may or may not believe any of it. But this idea has taken root in the farming community, and it's a powerful idea. And I think the idea comes from this basic ecological concept that there's a relationship between biodiversity and ecosystem function. This has been studied a lot in the ecological literature, primarily in natural ecosystems. And this diagram here kind of simplifies it down to this nice looking curve here, where as we have the laser malfunction. As we have the number of species in a field or in a plot increasing, we get an increasing level of some kind of ecosystem function, right? This could be primary production, could be nitrogen retention. The number of functions you can measure goes on and on. It could be also some kind of composite of multifunctionality. And so, as we increase the species, we see that the average level of functioning increases as species richness increases. But what's important to notice is that there's this very wide range of functionality within a level of species richness, right? So all of these little dots back there stacked over one species represent different species or different plots, different replicates of the species. And so there's actually a very wide range. And what happens is as species richness increases, this range narrows and the average level increases. But there's kind of this plateau up here where the maximum, you actually can achieve maximum functioning with some monocultures, right? And so that there's been a lot of discussion around this this relationship, thinking about, well, is this just the selection effect, right? Whereas the number of species increases, you're more likely to select the highest functioning monoculture to be in your mix, right? It could be some kind of statistical selection process there. Is it really the number of species that's driving this, or is it some aspect of functional complementarity that's driving this? So there's been, in the ecological literature, there's been a lot of work done on this, and I think as we bring it into the agroecological realm, we can use some of that other work as a reference point and as a guide to how we approach our work. So some of the things that they're thinking about in ecological literature are different functions, and the multifunctionality. They're thinking about different types of biodiversity. So is it taxonomic, the species identity, or is it different functional traits of the species, and there can be different components of biodiversity, so richness, evenness, and divergence. How do those all interplay with each other to affect functionality? And then a lot of the functional diversity work has gone towards looking at a trait-based approach, so functional traits that drive the ecosystem services. So it might be, you know, growth rate or tissue chemistry, the C-to-N ratio. So, you know, cover crop mixture work in the last 5 years has certainly seen a lot of attention in the research work, in the research world. But if people have tackled little components of it, and I think, you know, Stephen, as you searched for speakers here, I think he found that there aren't a whole lot of people that are really addressing the whole entire big picture of this, right? So we've had papers that have looked at monoculture cover crops and multifunctionality. We've had studies that have looked at mixtures against a single function, most often biomass provisioning or carbon inputs. We've had studies that have looked at mixtures and multifunctionality, but haven't really brought in the trait-based functional ecology aspect of things. And there are just a few examples of work that have kind of tackled this multidimensional aspect of multifunctionality, looking at multiple functions, biodiversity, and trait-based approaches. And I think that's, I hope, where we're headed, and I want to use this talk today as kind of an illustration of how our group at Penn State has approached this. Okay, so I want to focus on a couple research questions for the presentation today. So first, do cover crop mixtures have greater multifunctionality than the component species in monoculture? And I hope this really goes right back to the title of the symposium so that we can try and provide some answers and insight into that question. Then, which components of biodiversity are predictive of multifunctionality, right? I think this can help us get to an answer of how we can best design and manage mixtures to be most multifunctional if we can understand which types of biodiversity we need to have in our cover crops. And then we also wanted to look at, does the biodiversity positively affect multifunctionality because it increases the magnitude of the beneficial services, right? You get more benefits from the mixture, or is it that mixtures actually alleviate or ameliorate some of the disservices that individual cover crop species can have, right? Cover crops, each species has its pros and cons. And so with the mixture, do you get more pros or do you just get fewer cons, right? So we want to kind of dissect our data to be able to look at that. So the context of this work is in an organic grain and forage rotation in central Pennsylvania, and we have three crops in rotation. Our cash crops are corn silage, followed by soybeans, and then winter wheat. And so there's two windows for winter cover crops in this rotation. We can plant them after corn silage, which in central Pennsylvania, that tends to be about mid to late September, or we can plant them after winter wheat, which tends to be in mid-August. Now, what we found is that the mixtures we've tried to plant after corn silage have not turned out like mixtures, right? We put out a six-species blend, and the only thing that takes root is cereal rye, okay? But so it's not really a great window for looking at mixtures. So what I'm going to focus on is this window here after winter wheat, where we've been able to reliably establish diverse mixtures of legumes, grasses, and brassicas. So we've got a research station experiment, a 30-acre experiment here, a full entry experiment with the three cash crops in rotation, and then down each strip are 12 cover crop plots. So this is just an aerial, four replicates in a block design there. And we've also taken some of the treatments and deployed them out around farms around the state. And I'm not going to talk about this work in detail, but I just wanted to let you know it was part of the project. We're going to focus on the research station results. So we selected six cover crop species to test in monoculture and to put into various mixtures. And we tried to pick six species that represent a range of functional characteristics. So we've got legumes, brassicas, and grasses. And across the top are all winter hardy species, and across the bottom are all winter killed species. So we've got a diversity of plant families and temporal aspects. So red clover is the winter hardy legume. Pea is the winter killed legume, typically winter kills in this context. Canola is the winter hardy brassica. Forage radish is the winter killed brassica. Rye is the winter hardy grass, and oats is the winter hardy, winter killed grass. So we had monocultures of these six species. We also had a no cover crop fallow control. And then we built up some mixtures targeted towards certain management goals. So we had a three species mixture targeted on nitrogen management, and we wanted to both retain nitrogen against leaching over the winter, as well as try and supply nitrogen to the following corn crop, right? And so the species we picked for that was a 50% seeding rate of the red clover relative to the monoculture seeding rate, a 50% rate of the Austrian winter pea, and then 20% rate of the cereal rye. So you can see it's stacked heavily in terms of the seeding rates towards the legume, and only a 20% rate of the grass here. So we were trying to find a mix that balanced, that balanced these objectives. And from previous work, we thought that a lower seeding rate of the grass would be better, so that it didn't outcompete the legume. So that's how we arrived at that seeding rate. We had a three species mixture that was focused primarily on weed suppression. So we chose two grasses. From previous work, we've seen that grasses tend to be better weed suppressors than legumes. We wanted to have the oats in there because they're the fastest growing cover in the fall. So we wanted fast biomass to really outcompete the weeds in the fall. But because we were going into corn, right, we didn't want to rely only on grasses. We wanted to have, some legume in there to potentially offset some immobilization from these grasses. So we put in 50% seeding rate of the red clover. So that's the three species weed mix. So then we built up a four species mix here, which is essentially this three species N mix plus canola. Okay, and the idea with this mix is we're building up functionality here. So we still want to get similar nitrogen benefits in terms of retention and supply to the following corn crop. We want to get the weed suppression, and we're adding the canola. Canola flowers in the spring in our climate, and so we wanted to add a floral resource in there to bring in pollinators and beneficial insects. So we're adding more diversity in terms of species numbers and functionals, and also trying to get more services out of the cover crop. And the last mix is the six species mix, so all six species together. And the goal of this mix was to have a treatment with the highest species richness, and then functional redundancy, right? So there's actually multiple legumes, multiple grasses, multiple brassicas, so that this is kind of the idea of an insurance effect, right? If one legume doesn't do well, maybe the other legume will, or something like that. So that was the goal of the six species mix. So we had these planted. We had them planted for three years in the crop rotation at different entry points. And in all of the plots, we quantify these multiple ecosystem services that the cover crops provided. So carbon inputs we measured as the cover crop biomass, and we used the sum of fall plus spring for all the species, okay? So, for something like cereal rye that's winter hardy, we actually have the fall cereal rye plus the spring cereal rye. So it's, a little bit of double counting there, but that's how we wanted to do it, okay, to reflect kind of a season-long average of carbon inputs. We sum the fall and the spring. Nitrogen retention, we buried these anion exchange resin bags at 30 centimeters right before planting the cover crops in the fall, and we left those deployed all winter long, and nitrate that percolated through the soil profile below 30 centimeters was adsorbed onto those resin beads, And based on the aerial footprint of that at the in the soil, we can calculate up a leaching load in kilograms N per hectare. Nitrogen supply, we used a model that we calibrated through other work that predicted the nitrogen credit from the cover crop based on the total N content and adjusted for the C to N ratio. So that's kind of an index of nitrogen supply based on the cover crop residue chemistry. Corn yield, we measured corn was planted after these cover crops and fertilized with a phosphorus rate of manure. So the phosphorus rate is less than the nitrogen rate. So the idea was we were trying to put out an ecologically sustainable manure rate. So we based it on the phosphorus load as opposed to the nitrogen requirement. We measured partial profit of each cover crop system, and this partial profit, the factors that went into that is the change in corn yield, so silage, from the fallow control. So if you got a yield bump from the fallow, that's added profitability. A yield decline, that's reduced profitability. And then we subtracted out the cover crop seed cost. Okay, so this is kind of a partial budgeting approach to get at what the economic effect of the cover crop was on the system. We looked at Metarhizium. This is a beneficial soil fungus that can parasitize insect pests. So we took soil samples while the cover crop was growing and in the lab baited them with waxworm larvae and calculated measured the percentage of waxworm larvae that became infected by this fungus. And we measured weed suppression, which was simply the weed biomass that was present in a cover crop plot in the fall and the spring summed together. So, you know, these metrics are all measured in different scales. So to do a multifunctionality analysis, you need to somehow standardize all of the different measurements. So this is how we standardize them. So we calculated a service level of each cover crop, which was the value of the service in the cover crop plot minus the value of the service in the fallow plot. Okay, so if the cover crop provided a beneficial service, this value is positive. And if it provided a disservice, this value is negative. Okay, then we standardized it using the z-score. So it's the service value calculated here divided by the standard deviation of the services or of the values within a service. And so a z-score of zero means that the cover crop performs similarly to the fallow control. A positive z-score indicates a service, and a negative z-score indicates a disservice. And there were some measurements, nitrogen retention and weed suppression, where we actually had to multiply the values by minus one so that we get a scale where the service values are all positive, right? So positive value indicates a beneficial service provided by the cover crop. So the next thing we need to do was have some way of quantifying diversity of the cover crop treatments. And it's fairly easy to look at taxonomic diversity. So you have richness. Taxonomic richness is simply the number of species in your cover crop planting. You know, here we had one, three, four, or six. Okay, and then evenness is just a measure of how evenly the biomass is distributed amongst the different species, and it ranges from a value of zero, which is dominated by one species, to one, which is perfect evenness of all of the species in the mixture. Now, functional diversity is much more complicated to understand and visualize. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time going through some of these factors of functional diversity. So we have richness, evenness, and divergence, and this is the diversity of functional traits, okay? So you need to think about what your traits are going to be, but I want to explain these concepts of richness, evenness, and divergence with just some simple illustrations here, okay? And this is from a figure Villager's work here from 2008 that I thought did a great job, better than I could do, of explaining richness. Richness, evenness, and divergence. Okay, so richness is, imagine the volume of trait space that your community provides. And by trait space, I mean thinking about the multiple traits that you have for a species and then plotting them on different axes, okay? And so this is, here we can have two traits, okay? And we can plot each species in the community on this trait space here, and the number or the size of each dot corresponds to their abundance in the community, okay? And richness is simply the volume of the trait space, okay? So if we were to try and encapsulate all of these traits within a bounding polygon, that's the richness, the volume of that polygon, okay? And it could be a three- or four-dimensional polygon, and there's mathematical formulas for how to calculate that. So evenness is the regularity with which these species are placed within the trait space, as well as the regularity of their abundances. And so the way to think about this is what they call the minimum spanning tree, MST. And so that means connecting the dots in the minimum number of segments, the shortest number of segments that you can do, and then put those out in straight lines, and it's the regularity with which you see species along these lines, as well as the regularity or the evenness of their abundances, okay? So that's functional evenness. And then the last thing is functional divergence, okay? Functional divergence is how far away your species are in the trait space from the center of gravity. So if we have these traits here, the center of gravity is going to be this dot there, and then there's a mean distance from the center of gravity, which is the circle. And then if you were to take the distance from the circle, either inside or outside, of all of these species and lay it out on a line like this, having species that are outside, far outside of the circle, and having their abundances, large abundances, outside the circle, so on the edges of the trait space, okay, that's functional divergence. All right, and I'm going to give you some examples related to our cover crop mixtures to try and clarify this a little bit. Okay, it took me several weeks to understand this, so I'm hoping that, so if you're not there with me yet, I hope you will be in a second, okay? So it's this trait space, all right? You have to identify what are the traits that will be your axes of the trait space. So previous work from our group identified that cover crop biomass and carbon to nitrogen ratio were related to several of the ecosystem services that we measured here. So traits that we could assign to each species that are associated with biomass and C:N ratio are the fall growth rate, the spring growth rate, which we expressed as the kilograms of biomass production per hectare per growing degree day in the fall, which is from when they're planted to when they're sampled, base temperature 0 degrees Celsius, the same for the spring, and then the peak C:N ratio. So for each species, that's peak biomass. The winter-killed species, that's going to be in the fall, and the winter-hardy species, that will be in the spring. So their C:N ratio at their maximum biomass production. Okay, so those were the three numerical traits that we have. Okay, and so we can plot each of the six species in our study on this three-dimensional trait space, where we have spring growth rate on one axis, fall growth rate on the other axis, and then the peak C:N ratio on the Z-axis here. So you can see each of the six species, how they're distributed in this trait space. And, generally this reflects that we had a fairly functionally diverse range of species that we drew from. And that was intentional, right? We intentionally had these diverse species that kind of encapsulate this wide range of trait space here, okay? We also used categorical traits of brassica, grass, and legume, which we coded as dummy variables. So let's look at the three mixtures in our trait space here, okay? So the three species nitrogen mix, we had the rye, the pea, and the red clover, so you can see the distribution there. The three species weed mix was oats, rye, and red clover. The four species mix was rye, red clover, pea, and canola. And the six species mix, all six here. So one thing I did in here is I calculated the center of gravity, okay, which is important for the functional divergence. And the center of gravity for each mix is this black dot here, okay? So you can see how some mixes, there are species which are close to the center of gravity. So canola here is close to the center of gravity for this mix. Canola and pea tend to be close to the center of gravity for the six species mix. Okay, this will become important later on. Okay, so once you've thought about these different components of biodiversity, you need to quantify them, and you can do that with different metrics. So there's richness and evenness metrics. You know, richness simply the number of species, evenness the evenness of the species for the taxonomic realm. Now there's indices that try and capture multiple dimensions, right? So the Shannon Index and the Simpson Diversity Index is a composite of richness and evenness, so that you can represent biodiversity with a single number based on an integration of richness and evenness. So those are all based on the taxonomy of the species identity, right? So then within the functional realm, we have metrics for richness, evenness, and divergence, which these metrics are designed to isolate the effect of richness, evenness, and divergence into separate indices. And then we have some indices that are composites of multiple components of diversity. So we have like abundance-weighted functional attribute diversity, THAAD being from up here, is basically the richness weighted by the evenness. Okay, so it's a composite of richness and evenness there. There's an index called Rao's quadratic entropy, which is designed to integrate all three aspects of biodiversity, richness, evenness, and divergence. And then there's a version of this Rao's quadratic entropy called relative Rao's quadratic entropy, which is where you express the quadratic entropy relative to the maximum entropy of a given species. So essentially what this does is it takes out the richness component of quadratic entropy. So now you can compare communities with different richness levels. You can compare them with this Rao's relative quadratic entropy on a kind of richness weighted, or you factor richness out of it, basically, okay? The nice thing about all these different metrics is that we can see which metric is the best related to ecosystem functioning, and helps us identify what aspects of biodiversity we might need to try and manipulate in a cover crop mixture. So let's just visualize this in our six species mix, some different potential scenarios, okay? So here I'm going to, the size of the bubble on each species represents its abundance, okay? And so this is an example of where we have equal abundances. And so it's high richness, right? The volume of the trait space is as large as it's going to get. It's high evenness because everything is even abundances. It's a moderate level of divergence, okay, because we have some species that are, at the extremities of the trait space, and some that are, in the middle. So it's a moderate level of divergence. And it's a moderate level of entropy, okay? Entropy is basically dispersion towards the outside of the trait space, okay? Even dispersion towards the outside of the trait space, and I'll illustrate that a little bit more here. Okay, so here we have the same level of high richness. Now it's a moderate level of evenness, so from here we've decreased the evenness because now the abundance of some species is greater than other species. We've increased the divergence because the abundance is now shifting towards the outside of the trait space, okay? And we have high entropy because it's evenly dispersed around the outside of the trait space. If you think about entropy, things kind of randomly wandering towards the outside, evenly spaced around the outside, that's high entropy for diversity. Okay, now we've got high richness, moderate evenness. Now the divergence is low because the abundances are focused towards the center of the trait space, okay? And it's low entropy because we've got this, weight towards the middle of the trait space as opposed to the outside. Okay, and here's a scenario where we still have high richness. Now it's the lowest evenness we have because it's heavily weighted towards one species as opposed to the others. We've got high divergence here because now all the weight is towards the extremity of the trait space here, It's high divergence, but it's low entropy because that weight is in one direction. It's not evenly spaced around the outside. Okay? So I hope this helps to clarify a little bit about what these multiple aspects of diversity mean in a real setting here. Okay? All right. Let's get back to something that's probably a little more familiar, the spider plot. Okay, if you've read any cover crop mixture literature recently, you've probably come across this spider plot. Okay, it's simply a way to graphically represent different services on a common plot. Here at the zero line here is the no cover crop control, and so if we're plotted on the outside of this line, that's a positive service. Inside of this line is a disservice. Our values are getting negative here. Okay, so we can plot different treatments on these spider plots to evaluate kind of semi-quantitatively the distribution of services and whether they're inside or outside of the control value. So here's our six monocultures here. You can see for that some of the services were outside. Here we're having, you know, positive beneficial services, so weed suppression, carbon inputs, nitrogen retention. We're generally all better than the fallow control. And these also seem to be related to each other, right? The three services are related to each other in terms of if you're, you know, outside on one, you're outside on all of them. But across the six monocultures, there's a lot of variability across how we score there on those. Now, there's some services where the cover crops performed worse than the control, so disservices. So, for example, nitrogen supply, the cereal rye is on the way inside here, so it immobilized a lot of nitrogen, so that's a disservice. We see, you know, with nitrogen supply across the monocultures, there's a lot of variability as well, like the pea had the highest nitrogen supply. Corn yields, also a lot of variability, some inside, some outside, and so on. So the mixtures, our four mixture treatments here are now plotted together on this spider plot. And one of the first thing that jumps out to me is that there's a lot less variability now within each service level, right? So look at weed suppression, carbon inputs, nitrogen retention. The mixtures pretty much performed very similarly to each other on all of these metrics here. We also tend to not see the most extreme negative disservices here. So, for example, here the rye monoculture was almost to the very inside here, and here the worst of the mixtures isn't nearly as bad as the worst of the monocultures. So, but again, this is a sort of a semi-quantitative way. It relies a lot on visual observation of the patterns and whatnot, and it's difficult to really push these through any more further quantitative analysis. If we want to look at average multifunctionality, we have to basically move away from individual services, look at them as a composite. So what we did is we averaged across all the services, we averaged them together to get an average z-score, and that's going to be our multifunctionality index here. Okay? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to plot the different treatments across the x-axis here of species richness, and we'll see what the multifunctionality score looked like. So these are the different cover crop treatments, and the big black dot is the mean across three site years, and the gray dots in the background there are all of the individual observations. So we did a pre-planned comparison between the mixture, so the average mixture value versus the average monoculture value, and indeed the mixtures on average have greater multifunctionality than the monocultures on average. But if you drill down to individual treatment level comparisons, you see that there are some monocultures that are highly multifunctional. So the pea was more multifunctional than any of the other monocultures and as multifunctional as all of the mixtures. In fact, it was more multifunctional than the six species mixture and the three species weed mixture. Okay? So you can have high multifunctionality with a monoculture. Darned if this plot here doesn't look pretty much exactly like this classical biodiversity ecosystem function relationship that's been well described in ecological literature. What we wanted to do is drill into the mixtures here, and you can see there's a lot of variability with mixtures still, okay? What factors of biodiversity control that variability so that we can hone in on managing for a mixture that is the most multifunctional, right? That's the goal of this symposium, is to identify cover crops. How can cover crops maximize multifunctionality? So if we can understand this variation, we can understand how to make mixtures more multifunctional. I wanted to turn to our multifunction or our diversity metrics here. The trouble with the diversity metrics is that they're all correlated with each other, right? So to alleviate that correlation, we did a factor analysis, which is simply a principal components analysis with a Verimax rotation to identify these latent factors of biodiversity. And we can see how each metric corresponds. So this factor one, and these four factors here, account for 95% of the variability in the diversity metrics. So factor one, the most important factor, or with the most variance explained, is loaded on richness metrics. Okay, so this is either taxonomic richness, the species richness, or functional richness. So here, really, because we had a diverse range of monocultures to choose from, increasing species richness also meant increasing functional richness. Okay. The second factor, biodiversity factor here, is loaded on evenness. Okay, so species evenness was the highest loading factor there. Okay, so the taxonomic evenness. And then there's these metrics, which I mentioned are designed to integrate across aspects of biodiversity, right? So we've got the Shannon and the Simpsons diversity index. We've got the weighted functional diversity index here. And we've got Rao's quadratic entropy, which is designed to integrate functional evenness, richness, and divergence. Now, one thing I want to point out is here we've got relative Rao is separated from Rao. Okay, remember I said relative Rao had the richness aspect of it factored out, right? And look how nicely relative Rao is orthogonal to our species richness, okay? So this metric is a way of representing functional diversity without richness accounted for, all right? That's going to be important when we come back to things. Okay, over here, factor three is functional divergence, and factor four is functional evenness. And then again, we've got these metrics that integrate across domains of diversity, Rao and R-Rao, that account for both functional divergence and evenness. So which of these factors best explain the variation in our average multifunctionality score within the mixtures? Okay, we did a stepwise linear regression selection process and found that two factors, factor two, which was species evenness, and factor three, which is functional divergence, gave us the best explanatory power for our average multifunctionality. Okay, so managing for functional divergence, which is, you know, outside in the trait space, towards the edges of the trait space, but evenly dispersed around the edge, that gives you maximum multifunctionality. Okay, the single diversity metric that best captures this is relative Rao. Okay, so just relative Rao gives you a R squared of 0.20, and it's highly statistically significant. And this shows you the plot of R Rao against average z-score. Okay, let's drill into this a little bit with some of our treatments here. Okay, this is the three species N mix. Now you can see there's a wide range of R Rao values across the plots in the three site years. And this is what each of these dots, I'm going to point out two dots for this. Okay, this is a low R Rao where we have all of the divergence focused on one species here, rye, okay? So you've got, it's not, you don't have the entropy, right? It's focused on one side. So here's a case where now this observation, it was more evenly distributed around these three species here, okay? So that really increased our entropy and it increased our average multifunctionality. In the four species mix, you know, at the lower end of R Rao, we had, again, highly weighted on rye, and higher entropy evenly distributed across rye and pea. And the other interesting thing about entropy here is that you get dinged for having abundance in the middle of your trait space, right? So look how here we went from having more canola to less canola, okay? So that helped out the RRAO. So this is a case where having species abundance in the middle of your trait space seems to decrease your multifunctionality. I think that's important. The three species mix, I'm going to point out three scenarios here. Here it's weighted on rye. Here it's weighted on oats. Both of these had relatively low RRAO scores and relatively low average multifunctionality. Here it's balanced between oats and rye, okay? And then the six species mix, here it's, again, weighted towards rye with very little elsewhere, so there's not much entropy there. And here we've got rye and oats. Now, the interesting thing about the six species mix is we have a lot of species in the middle of the trait space here. And what that seems to do is it seems to put a cap on the level of RRAO that you can achieve. Okay, so look, our six species never got above here, okay, whereas our three species was able to get way up here. So this seems to be a case where putting species abundances in the middle of your trait space is not a good idea for maximizing multifunctionality. So I'm going to start to wrap up here. We wanted to look at whether biodiversity increases multifunctionality by increasing the positives or ameliorating the disservices. And it turns out that there's no relationship between the positive values. So when you look at just the positive values of services versus the negative values, there's no relationship between any of the biodiversity metrics and your positive service level. Now, what we did find is your disservice level your disservices get less. So you have fewer disservices when you increase RRAO or evenness. And so this is just a plot of RRAO versus evenness, and most of the observations lined up here where increasing your RRAO also tended to increase your evenness, and the size of the bubbles is the level of disservice. So small bubbles means low disservices, big bubbles means big disservices or bad. So you want to be a small bubble in this plot. Now, what's interesting is there's this treatment, the three-species weed treatment here, where we had a tendency to get off here where evenness increased, but the entropy decreased, right? So this is kind of an unstable aspect, an unstable domain of diversity here that seems to be isolated to only this one mix. So there could be, like in the ecology literature, they think about stable states and resilience and things like that. This may be a combination of species that is not resilient in terms of ecosystem services. So there's this alternative state that it can go in this direction where evenness increases but entropy decreases and you get a lot of disservices, okay? So anyway, to conclude, cover crop mixtures seem to increase multifunctionality over monocultures primarily by ameliorating the disservices. Functional traits and functional biodiversity provide a quantitative framework for analyzing the biodiversity ecosystem function relationship. I think that's going to be really important to have that quantitative framework as we move forward. And knowing where the functional traits fall in this trait space seems to be very important so that you can manage the species abundances so that they're evenly dispersed around the edges of the trait space. So at the risk of sounding a little bit cheesy, I'm going to coin a phrase here. It's not how rich you are, right? It's not the richness that necessarily matters. It's knowing where to put your money, okay? So you don't need to have the functionally richest cover crop. You just need to have it evenly dispersed around the edges. Okay, so I want to thank the project team again, and we'll take questions. Steve and I will take questions together after his presentation. Sound good? All right, thanks.